all the compression to get thinned out.
And for the record, this next meeting is going to be for the board with Register Stakeholder Group, Tuesday at 4:15.
Great. Yeah. So I think we're going to get going here. I think Steve just said you've got a hard stop at the top of the hour. So this is the Registrar Stakeholder Group discussion with the board. My name is Matt Searle, and I'm the chair of the stakeholder group. So on behalf of the stakeholder group and our members, thanks to the board for taking time out of their day. As Steve just said, this is our meeting, our discussion. So we've got a list of topics here that we'd like to go through. Starting with the RAA, and Steve just said the same old topics, and hopefully this topic will this will be the last meeting that we're discussing negotiations and the status of the RAA. There's obviously been a lot of talk about that so far this week, and we're close to the finish line, just about at the finish line, but really the topic for us is to talk about the proposed amendment process, the extraordinary amendment process, which I guess it's being called now. And I think Jeff Eckhaus on our team had some points that he wanted to make to lead that discussion. So we don't normally do intros. So yeah, I'll turn things over to Jeff. Jeff.
Thank you. This is Jeffrey Eckhaus here, Vice Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. So I think one of the – I'm not going to talk about the process of how we got to the amendment because I believe this group here and the registrar negotiating team had a very deep involvement with ICANN staff on the process, and I felt that it was very inclusive, and I believe that most of us are at a point where we could say happy, or I think that might be the word of where we are. But I do have – a question for the board, and hopefully you could help us out. When people bring up the need for this, we don't know what we don't know, and we don't know what's going to happen. And then people will come out with an example such as vertical integration. And to me, vertical integration is something that was clearly decided by the board, and that is any issues relating to it are, you know, according to the board ruling in, I think it was 2010, was that it would be subject to consensus policy. So what I would ask the board, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask here, but if you could ask and work ICANN staff to maybe even work with us and work with the registries on coming up with examples of what could be some of the items that could go through this extraordinary amendment. The reason being, we're all business people. We have businesses to run. And we're a little unsure of what can come through this process. And I think that if we could work with staff then and come up with examples, I think it would put a lot of people at ease. And I think some of the commotion would calm down if people had some general ideas of what are some of the subjects that could come through this. We're not looking for specifics, but sort of what categories or what areas could come through this process. And I would ask the board if they could, I don't know if it's direct staff or what that, you know, the official request would be to either work with contracted parties or with others or the community to try and figure out what are some of the areas that could fall under this, and because I think it would be helpful for the community in general.
May surprise you, but the board's been asking for similar things. But I appreciate the subliminal suggestion. I see cupcakes being passed out, so there's an idea that we could put in, that cupcakes at every meeting could be something that the board might unilaterally insist on.
So, sorry, I just want to confirm. So that's something that...
Yes.
I'll wait till this handsome gentleman finishes passing out the cupcakes.
This has now become Adrian's meeting.
I'm watching my figure.
Yeah, me too.
So I want to confirm that, Steve, that is something that the ICANN board has asked for itself and that you are, I guess you could say, in agreement or believe that that is something that this community could really – would benefit this community with that information.
Yeah, and just to pick up on Jeff's point, you know, I think we all sort of understand how we got to this place. Well, one of the things that we've been discussing is, you know, is the board comfortable with the role that it's being put in with this new amendment process? And have you all talked about what implications that has in terms of the board taking on this new role? And yes, you know, it's limited to extraordinary circumstances and things like that, but you know, there could come a point in time where something goes through this process and ultimately gets to the board. And is this something that a position the board is comfortable being in?
So, you know, I have a very strong preference for being kind of direct and getting right to the issues here. The board's role in these matters is not extraordinarily rare, if and exceptional, if it ever happens. And the board's usual role is that things are initiated elsewhere. They're initiated by SOs, ACs, by staff. And the board is in an oversight process, oversight role of watching process, of taking in sometimes different points of view, and looking for sensible courses of action. When the board passes a resolution, there's got to be quite a bit of preparatory work that's been done before it comes to us. We're not almost, you know, I don't want to put an absolute never, but we really avoid trying to be in the position of writing things from scratch and saying, well, we've decided to do the following and we're passing a resolution to make the following happen. It's possible, but it's not the normal mode. So with respect to the language that is being put in place, and you're asking about the board's role very specifically, that's the way things get structured, and yes, we take the blame or take the responsibility for the ultimate results, but it's not a board-initiated action that is likely to come through there. It will be initiated by staff, it will be presented to us, or it could be initiated by somebody else. And the only reason why it's written as the board has to do that is because that's where the ultimate authority and responsibility is. But the proper focus is exactly in the negotiation process of staff, legal staff, and contractual staff, and so forth. And the question that I think you want answered, and that we will listen to eagerly as well, is what scenarios do they have in mind, or do they imagine? And we've heard good fraction of that story, but I would have to agree that there's more that would be helpful to hear. And who's here from senior staff at the moment? Anybody? Just CEO and COO. You don't want to. And as I said in the previous session with the registries, we don't want to have a parallel negotiation session here. It's not the best way to do things. But so that's, you know, kind of what has to be said about the board's role in this. The board is not going to be kind of capricious and arbitrary. The board will tend to be extremely cautious. We have a sizable board, and there is not a single person on the board who is shy or reticent, and we take the due diligence and fiduciary responsibility very seriously. And so if we're presented with something that does not make sense, or that we don't understand, or that we think is not ready, our general reaction will be to push back or hold off, rather than to be stampeded into, you know, we're told this is important and therefore we do it in the middle of the night. We've been through that experience in the years past, and I'll just say it's sufficient that we will try to avoid doing that in the future.
Yeah, I can start to take a cue. I've got Elliot. Elliot, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to give it. I want to take the point around examples, which, you know, as you know, and I think anybody who's been following this discussion this week knows, I've been pounding the table on and why it's important. So I want to tell a story from a conversation I had this morning where I was discussing this with somebody in the community, you know, well-placed member of the community, and they gave as an example, they said, that's great, I've got an example for you. You know, what if some huge company from outside the space comes in and buys up a bunch of registrars? You know, we just don't know what's going to happen. And I said, perfect. You know, and I want to use this to drive home why specifics in an example are important. And they're not to be bound by them. But, you know, I said, okay, great. Give me a number. You know, how many registrars would you, you know, or what market share would you think would be important before the public interest was affected? And they immediately went to, I don't know. And we agreed that if, you know, somebody came from outside the space and bought registrars representing 98% of the namespace, well, that's probably a problem. But would it be a problem if it was the top three registrars who were 70% of the namespace? And would it be a problem then if GoDaddy just got another 20% bigger? And, you know, these are great examples, you know, where just hearing what's in staff's mind around putting this forward around general language. Again, I want to stress, examples don't bind anyone. The language is general. We would always, and you would always, and they would always, have to interpret these things in context. But whenever you're negotiating a contract with general language like this, which has very, very powerful implications, it's really important to know what's in the minds of the other party to the contract. And so, you know, some are happy with where we are. I think everybody's done a fantastic job working really hard on this negotiation. But I got to tell you, when the person that is sitting across the table from me and looking to contract can't say to me, well, here is an example of a situation or two or three that I want to protect myself from, it becomes very difficult for me to be comfortable signing that contract.
You've been eloquent on this point multiple times. I think I've multiple forums, so I understand your point.
Yeah, go ahead, Becky.
I don't know who you talked to, but let me submit that they haven't read the existing language because that is not that would not fall within the category of subjects that could be dealt with under the extraordinary amendment process. Doesn't work. Period.
Yeah, it's you know it was somebody else's specific. I think Becky, the important thing is that we have to hear. I have to hear one or two that are specific. I mean, you and I have talked about the language and sort of, you know, what bounds it. And I think you did a great job bounding it. Again, you know, let us know what this bumps up against.
Okay. Any other comments on this? Excellent. I'm going to turn things over to Volker. One of the other issues that's come up in the public interest specification is the requirement for new GTLD operators to use only ICANN accredited registrars under the 2013 RAA. So I'll turn things over to Volker.
Hello, my name is Volker Greimann. I work with the German registrar, and I'm on the Genus O Council for the registrars. When I first got my hands on the public interest specifications, the so-called public interest specification produced by ICANN staff for the RA, frankly, I was insulted. Calling the requirement of registrars to sign a new RAA to be in the public interest before anything with the new GTLDs can happen is insulting to all registrars in the room that do their business in a legitimate way, that have always obeyed the rules put before them by ICANN, have done more than they are required to by ICANN, have grown this market in an exceptional way over the last 10 years, 15 years almost now, in the existence of ICANN. That's the naming part. I know what ICANN staff is trying to do with this. They want a quick adoption of the new RAA, but I think the way they are going about it is going the wrong way, and I would like to hear the board's view on that.
Rob, you want to?
Sure, I'd like to offer a counter argument to that. Rob Hall of Momentus. Volker and I both were on the negotiating team, so we're very familiar with this issue. I have the opposite of opinion. I believe that it's important that we find ways to get every registrar on this new contract as fast as possible, and the reason for that is there's very different levels of what a registrar must do in terms of verification and escrow that may be detrimental in the marketplace to registrars on the new agreement if a registrar is still on the old 5 years from now. So I view this as one of the ways to get registrars signing this agreement sooner rather than later. So I would offer the opposite opinion of I would like the board and ICANN to keep this. I don't believe it was done in bad faith. There may be other ways you can incent registrars to sign this faster as well, but I think it's important that we not end up with the situation where we are now, where we have registrars spread across two or three contracts. I think we should be looking at how can we more quickly get registrars onto one contract, and then this new contract, we've spent a lot of time building in how it gets amended so that this never happens again, so we never get registrars spread across different contracts, so that once a rule changes, it applies to everybody across the board, because you're going to find yourselves in a position where you could potentially have pre-2009, 2009 contracts and the 2013 contract, and it seems to me that the introduction of new GTLDs is the perfect lever to say, this is a new day upon us. Let's use this contract. I would also point out that a lot of the provisions operationally in this contract don't come in until January 1st, 2014 to give registrars the time to implement them. So this is not about you have to implement before you can have access to new GTLDs. You just have to agree to the contract.
Actually, we're not in disagreement on this, Rob. I think we need to have all the registrars under one agreement as soon as possible. I just think that the way of going about this was the wrong way because it indicates that registrars currently are not acting in the public interest, that the new agreement is necessary as a precondition to the new GTLDs, which is not the case. They have the new agreement and the new GTLDs have nothing to do with each other. I think this creates a public image that is detrimental to registrars under the current agreement. And I think ICANN staff has done a huge disservice to registrars by putting this in under the title of public interest commitment or even tying this to the new RA. The new RA.
I'm not in a position to give a complete response, but I will point out the following. First of all, I think Rob spoke quite eloquently. The one thing which is a very important part of this, which I don't think Rob mentioned explicitly, but which everybody knows, is it's not just a question of transitioning because new GTLDs in the abstract. There's large numbers involved, large numbers of contracts, and there's an unwieldiness if we can't sort of get this organized in a semi-uniform way. I think the idea that it's insulting, it's understandable. I've heard this once or twice before, but I think it's quite unintended. I don't think that that's the message that anybody was trying to get across. So we can apologize for the unintended appearance of that, really it's a much more benign issue that has much more to do with trying to be efficient about the business side of this. And as we say, we're all conscious of what the numbers are going to turn out to be, and that we're shifting from a small number of registries to a large number of registries and a lot more complication in terms of the number of registrars.
Good. Great. On the topic of new GTLDs, McKaylee, I think, wanted to make some comments on the board's view of the closed generics and see if we can get some feedback. McKaylee?
Thanks, Matt. I didn't actually want to make any comments to the board because I'm sure the board is very familiar with my views on this. What I was interested, however, is in getting some feeling from the board on how they can handle this, because it is obvious that a large number of people within the community, a lot of companies, a lot of private individuals, both contracted parties, non-contracted parties, governments out there are concerned by this. And now I know from talking to various people in hallways that it's not an easy thing to deal with due to the way the entire process has been set up. It's just a case of, is the board going to do something or are you going to not do anything? I mean, what are your thoughts, or if you have any?
Do something about what?
Stephen, you can't do that one to me. Come on, that's just...
Shireen?
Fair question. Let me tell you what we have done and what we intend to do. Okay. We passed a resolution on the 2nd of February asking for three things. And the reason we asked for those three things, because we recognize the complexity of the issue and the importance of it. Those three things were, we directed staff to do research and analysis on the history of all the decisions that were taken in relation to closed generic. That's number one. The second thing is we initiated a 30-day public comment period. And the third thing, we requested some guidance on this issue from the GNSO. On the 7th of March, we received the guidance from the GNSO on this issue. Then we met on the 18th of March again, the committee, to review all the public comments. Okay, and then we had another meeting just on the Friday, beginning here, to agree the next step of what we're going to do. And what we said is we're not going to make any decision while we're here in Beijing, but we intend to make a decision immediately or shortly after Beijing, probably somewhere between the 20th and the 30th of April. And in fact, we have set a provisional date for a GTLD committee meeting to discuss and review everything we have on hand, including all the comments that are made this week and any advice we may get this week. And then we will meet, and hopefully the intention is to make a decision at that point.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Let me add one other point that I meant to try to insert much earlier. We do have a time bound, but it's not the top of the hour. We have till a quarter past, so which is now 100% improvement.
Great, thanks, Steve. I've got Stefan in the queue, and then James, and I think we've pretty much covered these three topics, unless there's some other points that folks would like to make. I don't believe there are, but we've got some other topics that I think folks wanted to bring up. So Stefan and then James after that.
Thank you, Matt. This is Stefan Van Gelder representing NetNames. I wanted to make a point not on this agenda, but about what we're seeing as a trend, or what I'm seeing as a trend, on working groups or drafting teams, or whatever they're called, like the expert working group and the selection criteria for those groups. Now, in recent ICANN memory, I have no recollection of access to groups being so tightly controlled that you have to volunteer, go through a process, be elected, be selected, whatever, for groups that then go into deliberative mode, come up with recommendations that have to be followed by the whole community. And I would like to suggest that rather than have the requester, in this case the ICANN board, select the group members, we just limit the size of the groups. I understand the groups can't be limitless, otherwise they would be non-functional. So we could limit the size of the groups to a specific number of participants and then allow each ICANN community to select members to that group. Now, there's a part of that, I believe, that goes on, but from the outside, it looks very much like this is a members' club, and you need to be selected to become part of the club, and it doesn't seem to fit with the multi-stakeholder bottom-up process from the way I'm seeing it. Thank you.
So, two key points. I'm not sure which of the recent selection processes you're particularly focused on. There are two that are very visible. One is the ATRT second round, and the other is the expert working group formed to look at next generation directory services. The dynamics are different, but share the characteristic that there was a selection process in there. With respect to the latter one, the expert working group, in your description of the process, there's a very key point that we need to focus on and adjust. The output from that group is not, I'll repeat, not going to go directly into anything that is required. It goes into... actually, I want to expand on this a little bit. The plan is for it to go into a GNSO policy development process. It is intended to help frame the questions clearly enough to give a much higher chance that the PDP will be successful, in contrast to the many, many attempts in the past to improve or do something about the flaws in the WHOIS system. But it has no force of no force behind it. It is intended to generate ideas, but not to insist on them. And there's confusion on that point. It's I have some regret that it got even cast as it will go directly from there to the RA. That's a non-starter from my position, I think that has now been clarified. There is further at least in principle, a chance that what comes out of the expert working group process is not even adequate for the purpose of framing the questions properly, in which case we'll be in an earlier, less mature position, and we'll have to go into some other mode of trying to figure out how to go forward. So the best option is the one that I said, that it kicks off a policy development process with a well-defined statement of the problem and some interesting ideas. And it may not even be as good as that, although I have high hopes for it, as we all do. The ATRT is a slightly different, and I'm not sure which one you want to talk about, but I'll...
Actually, just to help you out there, Steve, I wasn't talking about the ATRT, which to me is a team that is selected by the community very much. So I was talking about the two most recent examples are the expert working group and the meetings committee, or I forget the name, the group that Sebastian is working on. Both of those seem to me to be... I'm talking about the general process rather than the specifics, but I didn't get a sense that there was any way for the ACs and the SOs to just select themselves. I felt that the people selecting for those groups were the same people that were asking for the groups to be formed in the first place, and that's what was bothering me.
Yeah, I can't speak about the meetings group. Ray?
No, I wasn't going to speak to the meetings group. I was going to speak to the new directory services. The board didn't form that working group.
That's right. The board directed.
It was formed by the CEO. The CEO is doing fact finding, trying to get information for the staff to help formulate questions and ideas and things to be put forward into the policy development process. It's not intended at all to do anything to tell the community this, that, or the other thing, or to do anything else. Like Steve said, the best output from it is to be able to come up with some things that are readily taken into the GNSO. In the worst case, there may be, have to be some more work done on it, but the output is nothing more than that. And so the key element, though, is that this is not done by the board.
Sorry, right, just the key element to me is that the selectors don't make the choice, so the community makes the choice, whether it's the board or FADI, whatever.
Well, if it's the CEO doing his function, trying to find out information so that he can provide information input, and the fact that the group does have public comment to try and find information, that's one thing. I mean, he could have chosen not to do that and could have just had the staff do it all internally as well.
Bertrand?
Just a quick response. One of the challenges is that the modalities that Stefan are mentioning remind me a little bit too much of what the task forces were before. So we're always caught between this desire to have direct representation and a system that is more flexible. However, the main solution, the formation of a limited group that represents the diversity without making constituencies that designate the specific seats is a very delicate problem. And the only way to go through those processes is to go in stages whereby, as Ray said, the early stages of an expert group, however it is composed, is just a preliminary input in the next stage, and that it's a progressive refinement. But the challenge of forming a limited group without a clear designation process through channels of election is one of the biggest challenges of the multi-stakeholder process, actually.
I'm not sure exactly why there's a lot of tension about this, but this isn't, let me say what it is. The expert working group, and I didn't have anything to do with the selection process except Chris Despain and I are on it as liaisons from the board and as part of the process that kicked this off and helped define what was going on. The selection process was intended to provide diversity in the sense of we needed to have experts who understood what the needs of law enforcement were from a technical perspective. We needed to understand from a domain abuse point of view, from privacy point of view, and from other things. There is no one-to-one relationship. There may be some rough correlations, but there's not a one-for-one relationship between that set of issues and the way the constituencies are structured in ICANN. The matching up of the constituency structure in ICANN is part of what will come in during the policy development process, not bypassed at all, but not matched very well to the need to have an expert. I sort of have an image in mind of how are we going to select a surgeon because we've got a delicate surgery, and the last thing I want is to have everybody in the family make a vote on which of surgeon. I mean, you know how that comes out, right?
Yeah, so I've got James, McHaley, and Volker. James, go ahead.
Thanks, Matt, and appreciate Steve, Ray, and Vachant. I just want to echo a lot of what Stefan has said, and we, I think, consulted a little bit on the list prior to this, is that the net result, we can talk about the different procedures and the different components that built up to where we are, but the end result is that what is already a shortage or a crisis of volunteer participation is that individuals and organizations are being blocked from representing their stake. They've identified that they're a stakeholder in a particular issue and their voices or their ability to participate is diminished. We have I was on two of the review teams, and I know that the GNSO had put up additional endorsed candidates that were not selected. I know that the expert working group, for example, has one registrar on an issue that is critical to registrars across a number of different jurisdictions and business models. So it seems that if you can control the or gate the beginning of the process, you're correct that you can frame the issue and lead to a more efficient and desirable output. But you can also go very wrong very early in the process and miss out on, I think, some important expertise and experience that can help drive that output. So I just want to echo from Stefan that we're concerned about this just becoming more of a part of the ICANN culture, in that individuals would have to apply, demonstrate a need, demonstrate that they are qualified, whereas the culture up till this point has been one of self-selection and saying, I think this is something that's relevant to my interests, and I think I have something to lend to this effort.
Yeah, the expert working group selection process is part of the board's action with respect to the general who is problem. This really does fall into the part of the spectrum that is pretty unusual, if not extraordinary. The board's watched, along with the rest of the community, the wrestling that has gone on for essentially from the beginning of ICANN about the who is problem. It's watched the lack of success at really grabbing hold and sort of solving the problem to the extent that it's solvable. When the affirmation of commitments was written and was being negotiated, there was language in the affirmation of commitments about doing a review of who is on a regular basis, and that language had some key words in it that constrained the review to basically hold constant some things about the WHOIS system that many of us felt were fundamental mistakes in assumptions about, limited the range of possibilities. I happened to be in the room at the time that it was presented to the board, and there was this negotiation between the U.S. government and our CEO at the time was overseeing this process and presenting it to the board, and the board was then in this awkward position of saying we recognized that this language was not optimal, and yet there was a lot of pressure to move forward with the whole affirmation of commitments document. So the way it played out is that we went along with that but kept track. We knew that this was going to have to be dealt with at some point. So I'm talking about September 2009, I think. Time passed. The time for the Who Is review came along. We duly chartered the Who Is review team. The Who Is review team did a earnest and very, very substantial job, but without any thing negative being said about them, and there's nothing negative to say, they were necessarily constrained within the parameters that had been baked into this. So when it finally came to the board to act on the recommendations from the WHOIS review team, we said we had to deal with two very, very important aspects of this. One is we recognized that the work of the WHOIS review team was a really serious, substantial piece of work. We needed to be supportive. It was appropriate to be very supportive of the work that they had done, to accept their recommendations and to put full weight behind the implementation of those recommendations. And at the same time, we had a kind of emperor's new clothes problem of, at some point, somewhere, somebody needed to be responsible to say, this is a point at which we need to make a shift. The approach that we adopted was what we called a two-prong, or sometimes called two-track approach, same idea, in which, on the one hand, we would, as I said, accept and support and vigorously pursue the implementation of the recommendations coming out of the Who Is review team, and do that at all deliberate speed as we put timelines in there and so forth. And at the same time, say it's time to look fresh at this area and to initiate a process that will lead to a the potential of a different system or a new set of ideas. Confusion. There was some degree of confusion in some people's minds. So let me try to add a little bit. We did not put a hard timeline into when that was going to happen. It's much more important to get it right. Much more important to understand what the issues were. And until we have concrete, useful ideas to act on, it's not appropriate for us to say, "And the implementation will have to be done by such and such a date." And again, further along that to that point, we do not want to derail or undermine the existing system and the improvements in the existing system. So the improvements in the existing system, and we made a point even of insisting on different wording, and we removed the word "who is" from the second track entirely. So "who is" reserved for the existing system, for the improvements in the existing system, for the review process that is attendant to that. And that is moving along and will get the full attention and support. And at the same time, we have this, you can think of it as kind of a research or skunkworks effort. And when that is in a state of sufficient maturity, first through this expert working group, which is an idea-generating process, and then through the policy development process, that's the point we will be then able to talk about whether or not that's the right thing, what the transition process will be, and so forth. This is a big deal. This is not a casual thing, and we would not expect that this would be regular sort of operation. This was a pretty strong understanding on our part that this was unusual, and in response to a decade or more of failed attempts at really wrestling with these situations. And just to bring it down to very concrete things, the idea of an administrative contact and a technical contact are left over from about 40 years ago when the ARPANET had a few dozen nodes and you wanted to know who the system administrator was. So in case there was a problem with that. That is an antique representation of the world, and the actual people who are in charge of domain names are the people who have accounts with a registrar, and that person, whoever it is, may or may not be the same as what's listed in the public who is a registry. That's at their option. There is such a sharp structural disparity between the way the system actually works and the model that's presented, that it's time to say, "Hey, let's take a look at this."
I'm sensitive to the board's time. We've got just about 5 minutes, and I've got five people in the queue, so I'm going to cut it off there. I've got Michaeli, Volker, Rob, Bertrand, and Yoav. So it's going to be a 1 minute speed round each. Michaeli, you're up.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep this really, really brief, and I'll speak really quickly and upset the interpreters. Just speaking quickly to Stefan's point about the output, there was a certain degree of confusion that was clarified for any of the registrars. I will actually forward on the clarification that I received, and Fadi came in and spoke with us the other day to clean that up. I don't want to go back over revisiting it over and over again. There was a confusion there. It's been dealt with. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaeli. Volker?
Well, I'm of the opinion that when there's a problem that cannot be solved by conventional measures, sometimes unconventional measures must be tried. However, these must feed back into the usual process, and that caused a lot of concerns, which have been, as Michaeli has said, allayed in the past week. However, many in the audience may not be aware of this, but the initial process that was proposed for the output of this group was not the output that is not the process that is currently there.
That's actually not true, Volker. The board's statement clearly outlined that it will be sent back into the GNSO for a PDP. Unfortunately, some people misinterpreted
let
that
me finish,
and went
let me
off.
Finish, let me. Okay, go on. Because I would just like to finish this. The way this was presented to registrars was as an amendment to the RAA, to the draft RAA that we are negotiating for a long while, where we would be agreeing to the output as approved by the board, no GNSO process necessary. So that caused a lot of concern with registrars and others who were informed by registrars.
Thanks, Volker. Yeah, yeah, Rob.
I'll be quick and do something perhaps a little uncharacteristic for me. I noticed in the last decade or so that the words ICANN staff somehow became an extreme negative in this community. And I'm amazed at the amount of shit we heap on them, and I've done my fair share of heaping, so I think it's important when they do the opposite to commend them on it. And I speak for myself, but I think most of my negotiating team would agree with me when I say 18 months ago when we started these negotiations, it was slow going. You had a change of CEO and a change of some senior staff during this process, and I can tell you that in the last 3 months, I have been impressed with the staff, their level of commitment to get this done. I know in the last 3 days, we've spent many hours locked in a room with them. They've moved other meetings around. I think they even blew one of the board meetings off with them to try and finish this. And I think it's important that the board realize that now, for the first time, rather than jumping right into the legalese of an agreement and wordsmithing, we seem to be talking about the larger issues and how we can solve them. And it's one of the reasons I'm not as worried about the proposed amendment process, because what I did see was a common shared goal of what would be best for the community, how do we get there, and I was very impressed with them. So I think it's important that we tell you, in my opinion, this was a great thing, and I was very impressed with their abilities and to get to this stage where we can all sign off and move on.
That's very gratifying to hear, and the board, too, has a very high opinion of the staff. Staff works extremely hard and is very, very knowledgeable and competent and very, very dedicated. So I appreciate very much hearing those words from you.
Bertrand and Yoav.
Yeah, just a point to come back on the formation of working groups or any type of group for that matter. It is extremely important, I believe, to keep in mind that the multi-stakeholder approach is not based on a representational model. Representative democracy is something where you vote, you designate people, you say goodbye for 5 years, and 5 years later they say, you didn't remember what I said, can you vote for me again? That's not the way multi-stakeholder model works. And working groups, when they are smaller, in my view, and I think that's the spirit of the system, are supposed to process information in a back and forth with the actors from the community. They gather this information, they process it, they produce synthesis and way forward, they bring it back for comment and so on. So the important thing is that any smaller group is not formed of representatives of people or representatives of groups or representatives of constituencies. Working groups of a smaller size or experts group have the mission and the purpose of taking into account the representation of the perspectives and the diversity of the perspectives, which means that a key criteria is that anybody in the community must have the conviction that there is at least one person in that group who will convey its position when it is sent. Not defend its position, convey it faithfully. That's the criteria. How you select those people is different. But if you understand this as not being a representation of the people, but making sure that they will discuss, it makes the formation a little bit better or easier.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Yoav?
Yeah, I want to address this on the same issue and relate to what Ray said previously about the fact that this team was set by the CEO and not by the board, although this is a notion that now there might be some more people that are aware of that or understand that, there's a matter of perception. And I do believe that there are quite a few people in the community that might not understand the difference or really, so, and that's the problem.
Well, I think, right on time. Yeah, no, that was pretty good. So with that, you guys have a stop. Thank you again for taking time out for us today. We always appreciate these interactions and thank the board for its time. Thank you.
Thank you all.